and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the question and answer session of today's call, you may press star one to ask a question. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'll turn the call to Mr. Elwin Grant. You may begin, sir.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Elwin Grant, and I am the branch chief of CDC's News Media Branch. I wish to thank you all for joining us for today's telebriefing for CDC's Vital Signs report on binge drinking. Here today to discuss the binge drinking study is Dr. Ursula, and that's spelled U-R-S-U-L-A, Bauer, B-A-U-E-R. Dr. Bauer is the director of CDC's National Center for Health, National Center for Chronic Disease Prevention and Health Promotion. Following her remarks, she will be joined by Dr. Robert Brewer, who is the lead for CDC's alcohol program, to address any questions that you may have following the remarks. At this time, I would like to turn it over to Dr. Brewer.
Hi, good afternoon. This is Dr. Ursula Bauer with the National Center for Chronic Disease Prevention and Health Promotion. Thank you all for joining us today. Excessive alcohol consumption, including binge drinking, accounts for an average of 80,000 deaths and 2.3 million years of potential life lost in the United States each year, and costs the U.S. an estimated $223 billion in 2006, or about $1.90 per drink. Binge drinking is responsible for over half of deaths, two-thirds of the years of potential life lost, and three-quarters of the economic costs that are due to excessive drinking. Binge drinking is defined as consuming four or more drinks on an occasion for a woman and five or more drinks on an occasion for a man. This level of consumption usually leads to acute impairment and is therefore strongly associated with alcohol-impaired driving, risky sexual behavior, and interpersonal violence. Over time, it can also increase the risk of other serious health problems, including cancer, heart disease, and liver failure. Yet most binge drinkers are not alcohol-dependent or alcoholics. Despite these serious health impacts, binge drinking remains a common and a largely unrecognized public health problem. Today, we're reporting that an estimated 38 million, or about one in six, U.S. adults binge drank in 2010. Binge drinkers also reported doing so on an average of four times a month, or almost once a week. And the largest number of drinks per binge was an average of eight, far exceeding the drinking levels that are used to define this behavior. This report also highlights how widespread the problem of binge drinking really is and how it affects some groups who are generally considered to be less likely to engage in this behavior. For example, binge drinking is most common among 18 to 34-year-olds, but binge drinkers age 65 years and older report binge drinking most often, an average of five to six times a month. Binge drinking is most often reported by people with incomes above $75,000 a year, but binge drinkers with incomes less than $25,000 a year consume the largest average number of drinks when they do binge, up to eight or nine drinks per episode. And in some states where fewer people binge drink, like Louisiana, Mississippi, New Mexico, South Carolina, and Utah, binge drinkers report consuming more drinks when they do binge. Fortunately, there are a number of effective strategies for preventing excessive drinking, including binge drinking, that are recommended by the Guide to Community Preventive Services. We need to work together to implement these strategies so we can reduce binge drinking and the many health and social harms that are related to it. I want to thank you for your time and your interest, and we'll now open it up for questions. Shirley, Dr. Brewer, and I will take questions.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 and record your name clearly. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. And one moment for our first question. Our first question comes from Mike Sobey with the Associated Press. You may ask your question.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I wanted to ask you about that one of the last statistics you mentioned, Doctor, the one about the number of drinks. I think you said 7.9 or 8 on average, and then of course we saw 9 in the age group 18 to 24. First of all, I just want to clarify, is that the average number of drinks for all episodes, or did you say it's the average number for the worst episode? I wonder if you could clarify that number. And then I wanted to ask you, even if you're stating the obvious, is 9 worse than 5 or 4, and why is it worse?
Mike, this is Dr. Robert Brewer calling. Good to hear from you. First of all, what we're reporting here are really three different measures of binge drinking, and this is a little different than what we reported in our vital signs last year. In addition to reporting the proportion of adults, what we'd refer to as prevalence, who engage in binge drinking, we're also then reporting the frequency and what you referred to is what we call intensity. That is the amount that is consumed per binge drinking episode. There are different ways to get at binge drinking intensity. The way that we assessed it in this particular study is by using a question that asks about the largest number of drinks consumed within a 30-day period. And we analyzed that, the findings from that particular question in the survey among people who also self-reported binge drinking. So that was the basis for our coming up with the estimate of an average of 8 drinks consumed, or binge intensity of 8. Now, as to whether or not that represents a typical level of drinking when binge drinking, we didn't specifically assess that in this study, but I can tell you from other studies that we have been involved in and have reported on that that level of consumption, 8, is consistent with what people have typically reported during binge drinking episodes. So I think that we would conclude that that level of consumption is a reasonable measure of typical binge drinking intensity.
Oh, wow.
Now, to get to your second point, which is effectively, does it matter how much people drink? Yes, the short answer to that, as you had guessed, is indeed it matters a great deal. And that has been best demonstrated when you look at problems that are more immediately associated with binge drinking, things like risk of involvement in motor vehicle crashes, things like risk of involvement in other injury outcomes. And indeed, there have been a number of studies that have shown that as the number of drinks that are consumed within a short period of time, which is what we're talking about with binge drinking, goes up, the risk of those adverse outcomes goes up quite substantially. And it isn't just by a factor of 1 or 2, it's by a much greater factor. So I think the important take-home message here and why we've talked about this study as showing that binge drinking is perhaps a bigger problem than people have realized is that it isn't just a question of whether people are engaging in binge drinking or not, which Dr. Bauer correctly defined as 4 or more drinks per occasion for a woman, 5 or more drinks per occasion for a man. It's also a question of how frequently they're engaging in that behavior and how much they drink when they do. And clearly we've got a lot of work to do to try to bring down both the frequency and the intensity of binge drinking in addition to prevalence.
May I ask one more question?
Certainly.
Is there, I know the way the statistics are cut, there's certain groups that seem to have be doing binge drinking a little more commonly. Is there a prototypical binge drinker? Is it a rich white male college student? Or is there a certain group of people that seems to be really driving this?
Well, Mike, again, very good question. I think it is safe to say that binge drinking is most common among males, particularly 18 to 34-year-olds, and surprisingly, in the minds of a lot of people, folks who have higher household incomes. Certainly, binge drinking is a problem with college students. Binge drinking is also a problem with high school students. Binge drinking is also a problem with active duty military. Binge drinking is also a problem with medical students, believe it or not. And we have published on all of those groups. So, in fact, binge drinking is a widespread problem in the population. And to drive that point home, I think it's worth noting that when you look at frequency of binge drinking, the highest frequency of binge drinking is actually among binge drinkers age 65 and older. And they actually have more episodes, that is, more times that they self-report binge drinking. And we're getting this all from surveys, so it's based on what people tell us they do. They actually report more episodes of binge drinking than do younger people. So again, I think it's perhaps tempting on the one hand, but perhaps a bit overly simplistic to try to isolate binge drinking to just particular sections of the population. In fact, it's a widespread problem across the entire population, which is why we think we really need to look at community-based solutions to address it.
Thank you.
Question comes from Timothy.
Shirley, we're ready for our next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Martin with Wall Street Journal. Let me ask your question.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. From the report itself and from the topic, it says that binge drinking is a dangerous and cost. Excuse me, binge drinking is a bigger problem than we thought. And I was wondering, could you address what you had thought binge drinking, what levels it was at? And I think Dr. Brewer had mentioned this in his previous response, but could you just talk about some of the surprises that might have come out from the data?
Well, we certainly had a sense that binge drinking is common, and we have reported that previously. Once again, unfortunately, we're affirming that it's about 38 million U.S. adults who report binge drinking on one or more occasions, so it's a large number of people. And I have to say in that regard, and I will come to your question here in just a second, that we know this to be a substantial underestimate of what actual binge drinking is because people tend to underreport their drinking behavior. And we've actually looked at that, comparing self-reports to alcohol sales, for example, and found that we're really capturing a maybe 30% of presumed consumption based on sales. So this is a big problem that we're underestimating. Now, to your question about why we then, to the extent to which we were surprised by our findings, I think that the difference here between what we're reporting in this report and what we have reported previously is that we really looked more specifically at the frequency, the number of episodes of binge drinking reported by various groups, and then also, again, this concept of intensity, the amount consumed per binge on average. And what we found was that, indeed, the frequency of binge drinking is very high, and the amount consumed on average, and again, this was based on looking at largest number of drinks consumed, was also very high. And I think what was also surprising here that we have not reported previously were some of the differences across states. And I think, you know, sometimes people can be lulled into a false sense of security that if it doesn't look like there's a large portion of adults who are binge drinking, perhaps compared to some other states, that maybe they really don't have to worry about the problem so much. What, in fact, we found, and I will certainly say was a surprising finding to us, is that a number of the states that have a relatively low prevalence of binge drinking, that is a proportion of adults that report ever engaging this behavior over the past 30 days, a number of those states, when you looked at the amount that was being consumed by the binge drinkers, we found that the number of drinks was actually very high. So I think the important take-home there is that you can have high-risk groups within the population that are consuming a large number of drinks, even though overall it may look like binge drinking is not such a problem. That's why we are trying to highlight the fact that it's perhaps a bigger problem than was generally realized.
Well, and to what extent was this always the case, and to what extent is this now you've measured it? You know, you've asked the questions and you have data looking at it, and I'm just wondering, has this always been the case, and now we just have a number associated with it? Thank you.
I think that's a fair point. We're not necessarily meaning to imply here that the number of episodes of binge drinking or the number of drinks consumed per binge has gone up substantially over, say, the last few years. I think what we're trying to do is provide a more complete and perhaps more nuanced picture of the issue of binge drinking to really highlight the huge public health impact that it has and the significant risk that it constitutes for population health. Now, I will tell you that based on other studies that we have done where we have looked at estimates of the total number of binge drinking episodes in the United States, we do have strong information indicating that the number of binge drinking episodes increased quite substantially during the 1990s, on the order of about 29%, from about 1.2 billion episodes to about 1.5 billion episodes. So there has been historically a substantial increase in binge drinking episodes, but that was not what we were assessing here.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Kathleen Doney with WebMD. You may ask your question.
Thank you. Good morning. Two quick questions. Has the recession affected binge drinking at all, if you know, and what do you do if you know a binge drinker?
We really didn't look at the effect of changes in the economy on binge drinking. Unfortunately, though, I think one would have to conclude, since we're looking at 2010 data here, that we really haven't seen an appreciable impact of the economy and the higher jobless rate and so forth on binge drinking rates. Unfortunately, it's continued to truck along at a pretty high rate.
Regardless of how the economy is doing, you're saying?
Regardless of how the economy is doing, yes. And that's been reflected in other statistics that have been reported through other surveys and based on alcohol sales as well. In terms of what to do about binge drinking, and you said, I guess, specifically what to do if you know someone who is binge drinking. Is that right?
Because I'm assuming the binge drinkers are in denial, right?
Well, actually, I think we ought to talk about that one a little bit. When you use a term like denial, that's often a term that is associated with people who are alcohol dependent or suffering from the disease of alcoholism. And as Dr. Bauer pointed out, in fact, most people who are binge drinking are not alcohol dependent.
Uh-huh.
To attach a figure to that, based on various surveys, it's over 80% of binge drinkers who are not alcohol dependent. So it isn't really a situation where you're talking about denial in the classic way that you would if you were talking about somebody who has a medical problem and doesn't want to acknowledge it for whatever reason. I think what we're talking about is a risk behavior that is quite widespread in the population, and frankly, where I think a lot of people have the impression that maybe it's not such a bad thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
I think that a lot of people feel encouraged to do binge drinking, particularly at certain times of year, such as the holidays that just passed us by. So if you ask me what I think we should do, you should do if you are dealing with someone who is a binge drinker, advise them not to do it. Advise them that the risks of binge drinking are very high, both in the short term and the long term. And I think there are other things that we need to do as a society that help to reinforce that message as well.
Thank you.
Next question, Shirley.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Janice Lloyd with USA Today. Let me ask your question.
Yeah. Hi, Dr. Brewer. Thanks for taking my questions. I've got two. The first one just seems so obvious to me is, why do you think some of these people are not alcohol dependent or alcoholics? And the second is, did you measure time of day, days of week, et cetera, and when people are doing binge drinking?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let me just clarify one thing with respect to alcohol dependence, because I don't want to have a misunderstanding here. We're certainly not meaning to suggest that there isn't a proportion of people who report binge drinking who would meet criteria, medical diagnostic criteria for alcohol dependence. Certainly there are, and I also want to be very careful to emphasize that we're not in any way trying to diminish the public health importance of alcohol dependence, nor the need to make treatment available for those who have that condition. That certainly is not the point. It's simply to point out that the large majority of people who are engaging in this risky drinking behavior would not actually meet the medical diagnostic criteria for the condition of alcohol dependence. And so what I think that challenges us as a society to do is to look at other ways to try to address that problem in addition to making appropriate services available for those who need them. I'm not sure if that answered your question as to why more people are not alcohol dependent. Was there something else there that you were interested about?
No, I think it was just, I was just curious to hear if maybe perhaps some of these people are alcoholic, and this is when they can drink, and this is how they drink. So,
right, and it certainly is correct to point out that the overwhelming majority of people who would meet diagnostic criteria for alcohol dependence are going to report binge drinking. What we're pointing out is really the flip side of that coin, which is that most of the people who are binge drinking are not meeting criteria for dependence.
Okay.
I hope that clarifies it perhaps.
That's
a little
good.
Bit.
And then the question about time of day or time of week, did you dig down that deep? Or?
Yeah, we didn't for this report. I mean, classically what you typically find, and this is certainly reflected in statistics on alcohol-impaired driving, which is very, very strongly associated with binge drinking, by the way, about 85% of alcohol-impaired driving episodes occur among people who self-report binge drinking. And classically, you tend to find alcohol-impaired driving and with it binge drinking occurring on weekends, Saturday nights, Friday nights, etc. But it's not restricted to just those days. But no, for this particular study, we actually didn't look at the how binge drinking is distributed across the course of a week.
Next question, Shirley.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Patricia Naiman with NPR. You may ask your question.
Hi, thank you. I just wonder a couple of things. One is actually a follow-up on the question that was just asked, and I'm sure I should know this, but what is the medical criteria for alcoholism? I mean, what is it, actually?
Yeah, it's actually more based on consequences and more based on people continuing to drink despite the fact that they're experiencing adverse consequences related to their drinking. Typically, those consequences appear first in the home environment and their family relationships, but certainly can appear in the workplace and in their work productivity. And in fact, the reduction in work productivity associated with excessive drinking is one of the largest cost items that contributes to the roughly $224 billion in economic costs that Dr. Bauer was talking about before related to excessive alcohol use. So there's this idea of continuing to drink despite adverse consequences.
So in that sense, it's sort of individual.
It has to do with the extent to which people can control their drinking behavior.
Right.
And classically, people who have alcohol dependence are not able to effectively control the amount that they consume. But there are a whole standard set of diagnostic criteria for alcohol dependence that have been spelled out and that are used to diagnose people that have that problem. What we're focusing on here, though, are people who are drinking above a level that we know to be dangerous. And again, for women, that's 4 or more drinks within a short period of time. For men, it's 5 or more drinks within a short period of time. And that would then constitute the definition of binge drinking that we're looking at here. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. So it's sort of individual, really, in terms of the impact of people's ability to function healthfully at home and on the job. And I mean, different people, I guess, would fall apart in different.
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking about the diagnosis of alcohol dependence, yes, that's going to be made on an individual level. And anybody who has concerns about their drinking behavior should certainly talk to their physician or their health professional about it. But that's not really what we're talking about here. The levels of consumption that are used to define binge drinking are sufficiently high to typically lead to a blood alcohol concentration of 0.08 grams per deciliter, in the medical terminology, 0.08 for women and men, respectively. So we're talking about what would also typically be referred to as impairment level blood alcohol concentrations. And that's not so much I mean, there's some individual variability there, to be sure, but that is certainly what we have found to be a dangerous level of consumption across the entire population. I think it's also worth pointing out again that what we're reporting in this vital signs is that a large proportion of the people who engage in binge drinking are actually drinking at levels that are substantially greater than that. And so I think for somebody who is consuming 8 drinks, for example, within a 2 or 3 hour period, I think that there's little doubt that they are putting themselves and others at significantly greater risk for a whole host of adverse harms. So you don't have to be alcohol dependent to experience very serious consequences from excessive alcohol consumption. And the reality is that most people who experience those consequences are not.
Can I ask another?
Absolutely.
30, just confirm for me the actual, if this is self-reporting, you said something about maybe may reflect only 30% of the actual amount of binge drinking. Can you, is that, did I hear that correctly, that?
Yeah,
that the 38 million could
only. Let me just maybe clarify it a little bit further. What I was actually referring to are some comparisons that we have done between what people report as the amount of alcohol they consume and what one identifies as the estimated level of alcohol consumption based on the amount of alcohol that is sold, what is sometimes called per capita alcohol consumption. And what we know, and it varies a little bit across states, but is that we're picking up maybe between 22% and 32% of what's often referred to as presumed alcohol consumption based on sales through a self-report like the Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System. So roughly speaking, we're probably picking up less than a third of actual alcohol consumption based on what people tell us they're consuming. Now, it would then be fair to say what proportion of that consumption is in the form of binge drinks, because I'm talking now about per capita consumption per person. And it turns out that about half of the alcohol consumed in this country is for adults is in the form of binge drinks. For young people, for underage youth, under age 21, it's about 90% of the alcohol that is consumed by that age group is in the form of binge drinks. So, yes, we are, as dramatic as some of these findings are, particularly in terms of the number of drinks consumed, our average largest number of drinks consumed by binge drinkers, it's probably, in fact, a good bit higher than that.
About how much higher than that, do you think?
Well, I can't say specifically for the measure of intensity. I think the better way to put it is as I did before, which is to say that we're probably getting less than a third of actual alcohol consumption based on what people tell us.
And then, and just one more thing. Did you break down at all beer, wine, and spirits?
Yeah, we didn't in this particular study. We actually have looked at what we might refer to as beverage-specific alcohol consumption in other studies. It turns out that beer is the most commonly consumed beverage by adult binge drinkers, and it turns out that liquor is actually the most commonly consumed type of beverage by high school students who binge drink. But that was not actually a part of our study in this case. We didn't have that information to look at in this study.
Shirley, we have time for just two more questions.
Hi, a lot of my questions have been answered, but I wanted to ask about the 65-year-old who report more episodes of binge drinking. Can you tell me anything more about the reasons why they might be doing this, whether they're being more honest in their responses or what the reasons behind that might be? And I also had a couple of other minor questions.
Sure. I can't tell you specifically what's going on in that population that wasn't actually part of our study. I think what it really reflects, though, is a larger problem that is not unique to seniors in particular. And I think a lot of it, frankly, boils down to the acceptability of binge drinking and the extent to which people have been binge drinking throughout their lives and continue to do so into their older adult years as well. We did not specifically take a look at whether the frequency of binge drinking, the number of binge drinking episodes varies among those 65 and older by different regions. But what we do know overall is that binge drinking tends to be very, very much affected by the environment within which people are making their drinking decisions. So I think seniors are affected by that, as are younger people and people throughout their lives.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And did you break things out by different geographic regions within a particular state? For instance, I noticed that D.C. is very high, but Maryland and Virginia is not. So do you have further data about areas within a state?
Not in this particular study. The data system that we used for this study, the Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System, does actually report out estimates of binge drinking for metropolitan areas, and that is available through their website, actually. We did not look at that information for this particular study. We were just looking at the state level. And we also restricted our analysis to those states that did both surveys by landline telephone and also by cell phone. So, in fact, there were a couple of states, South Dakota and Tennessee, and those were the only two, that were not included in this study because it turned out in 2010 they did not do cell phone surveys. But all of the other 48 states and D.C. were included in the study, but we didn't look at geographic levels below the state or, in the case of D.C., the district level.
Okay, and one final thing. A previous brief that you had done said that drinking and driving has gone down 30% over the past 5 years, and it said that 85% of drinking and driving episodes were reported by people who were binge drinkers. So is there a potential silver lining in that, even though there may be more binge drinking than we previously knew about, that people are controlling their driving behavior a little bit better than in the past?
That's a very good question, I'm certainly aware of the report that you're talking about. I think that it is fair to say that we've made substantial progress in reducing alcohol-impaired driving through the implementation of a variety of different effective policy measures, national implementation of a 0.08 blood alcohol limit, zero tolerance for drinking and driving among underage youth, for example, So I think there have been a number of policies that have looked at trying to uncouple the relationship, if you will, between binge drinking and driving, and therefore reducing alcohol impaired driving. So I think the fact that we've made progress in that area is certainly laudable. I think, as you pointed out, though, our findings emphasize is that we have a lot more work to do to actually address binge drinking, the pattern of consumption that is by far most strongly associated with alcohol impaired driving.
Thank you.
Thank you. And our final question comes from David Lukowitz with Fox News. You may ask your question.
Thank you very much for taking the call. I was curious whether there's any correlation that you've been able to find between alcohol advertising and this increase in binge drinking.
Well, alcohol advertising is widely recognized as being a risk factor for initiation of underage drinking and for higher levels of alcohol consumption among underage youth as well. This particular study did include adults in the 18 to 20 age group, but we really were not specifically focused on the underage population per se. So I do think that there's very strong information, very strong scientific information documenting that youth exposure to alcohol marketing is a significant risk factor for underage drinking and for drinking at high levels, which is typical, unfortunately, for underage youth. But we really couldn't say that exposure to alcohol advertising was a specific risk factor for what we're seeing and reporting on in this study. Though I do think that alcohol advertising certainly is part of the environment that influences the drinking decisions that are made by both adults and youth.
And do we see an increase in the levels of binge drinking? We're talking about four times a month, et cetera, but do we see it at specific times of the year, it increasing or going down?
Yeah, I think there is some seasonality in binge drinking. Of course, again, classically, a lot of drinking and a lot of alcohol sales occurs in the around the holiday period. Of course, some of that is gift-giving, and it may or may not be entirely reflected in the amount that people are consuming during that time of year. But there are clearly some times of year when alcohol consumption levels tend to go up. However, I think it's important to recognize that binge drinking continues to be a problem throughout the year, and often people will engage in binge drinking frequently, even during periods of time that are not expressly associated with a holiday. The Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System, I should point out, the data source that we use here, also conducts surveys throughout the year. So what we're getting is basically an averaging of the binge drinking behavior of adults throughout the year, through all 12 months. And we did not, I want to emphasize, and I think I may have mentioned this in regards to another question I answered, we didn't specifically look at seasonal variation in this study.
Or day of the week, is that correct?
That's correct, yes. We are looking at binge drinking overall across the year in 2010.
Thank you.
Sure.
I wish to thank everyone for participating in today's telebriefing. For more information about the Vital Signs Report on binge drinking, please visit www.cdc.gov/vital signs, all one word. For more information about binge drinking and other alcohol-related data and resources, visit CDC's Alcohol and Public Health website at www.cdc.gov/alcohol. For information about CDC's works in saving lives, protecting people, and saving money through prevention, visit our website at www.cdc.gov/24-7. A transcript will be available later this afternoon. For follow-up questions, please contact CDC's press office at 404-639-3286. This concludes our media telebriefing. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you, and this does conclude today's conference call. At this time, you may disconnect your line.